This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review,
hosted by Cal and Liam,
streaming at DCAUReview.com
and on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 301 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, my good friend, my good brother, the man that's been here for every single one of these episodes from start up until now. It's Liam. Liam, after a momentous occasion last week celebrating our 300th edition of the podcast, we are back here again, continuing where we left last 2 weeks ago with our Batman the Animated Series reviews. And we have a really good one to review today. At least I think it's good, spoiler alert. For this week's episode, it's a bit of a sequel, a follow-up to the original origin story of one of Batman's rogues. And it's kind of a whodunit, too. We got a mystery bit to it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a lot of fun here. Excited to review this one with you today.
Absolutely. So we are picking up right where we left off in production order on Batman the Animated Series episodes with the episode Second Chance. And like you said, Cal, a lot to sink our teeth into. Maybe the only episode that has, not counting two-parters, that has a direct flashback to a previous episode we've seen, mm-hmm. Which we'll certainly talk about. So building on the building blocks of Two-Face's original origin episodes, and of course the legendary two-parter there, we have a return here in this Second Chance, and we will get to the plot and all of our other categories. But first, of course, I must hit us with the official IMDb synopsis for this episode, and I believe that segment, this recap, is still sponsored by the Pod Tower.
That is correct. They've not pulled their sponsorship yet, thanks to the good folks at the Pod Tower for sponsoring this each and every week. This episode, Liam, originally aired back in September, on September 17th, 1994, meaning we are coming up here on the 30-year anniversary of this podcast, or this episode's, this podcast, on the 30-year anniversary of this episode's airing here in the United States. But of course, as you mentioned, this IMDb synopsis is brought to you by the Pod Tower. Head over today to youtube.com/thepodtower and subscribe. And not only will you get our entire catalog, all 300 plus episodes, including bonus episodes, available in one convenient streaming place, we also get additional podcasts from the Watchtower database and Tim Talk, all available in one convenient streaming location. Head over today and subscribe at youtube.com/thepodtower.
That's right, and this is the synopsis for Second Chance, which is an episode with a story by Paul Dini and Michael Reeves, with teleplay by Jerry Conway, really legendary comic artist. We'll talk about him later. Directed by Boyd Kirkland, music by Todd Haven, and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. Before undergoing surgery meant to remove both his disfigurement and his alternate personality, the surgery's not supposed to, never mind, I'll save my commentary for the end. And his alternate personality, Two-Face / Harvey Dent is kidnapped by persons unknown.
All right, please. All right.
Yeah. First of all, the surgery is not fixing his personality disorder. That's the therapy. The therapy is what did that. That's why his therapist is in the surgery room with him at the start of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Correct. But,
so factually incorrect. Otherwise, a general, albeit light on details, synopsis of the episode.
Agreed. Yeah. So let's just, I guess, jump into the plot then, shall we? As the episode suggests, we kick things off on a not quite rainy, but definitely stormy Gotham City as an ambulance arrives at the Gotham General Hospital. It just says hospital. It could be any Gotham hospital. It shows up to the hospital, and unloading from the back is a man in handcuffs. His wrists are cuffed. His legs are cuffed. And we only see a silhouette, but it is a very familiar silhouette as we get a striking yellow eye and pair of yellow teeth in the silhouette. It's sort of a, we'll talk about it in visuals, but it's a visual bookend for this episode, and it's a visual bookend or inverse of the visuals that we saw the reveal of Two-Face in the original episode, the first reveal of his look as the lightning strikes, and instead of seeing Harvey turn and his face is disfigured, it's the lightning strikes and it's completely Two-Face, and he turns slightly and you see Harvey's face. But as the somewhat disjointed synopsis, IMDb synopsis pointed out, there is a surgery that is scheduled here, and we get Harvey's therapist returning from the episode Two-Face, who is there to speak with him and let him know that she believes that the therapy and work that they've been doing to rid Harvey of the Two-Face personality seems to be doing well enough, and the next step is to have this physical surgery to hopefully remove the actual scars, and then that will be the last that they will hopefully see of Two-Face.
Your bad side is almost completely submerged. You've done very well in therapy, Harvey. You're more in control now, able to make decisions for yourself without relying on chance. Now it's time for the final step, erasing the scars that created Two-Face. I believe that once you are whole again, your mind will be strong enough to banish Two-Face permanently.
Bruce Wayne picked up the tab for this?
Yes.
Good old Bruce, he's never given up on me. Always been my best friend. I remember when we used to close the town at the Half Moon Club.
By the way, this just dawned on me while watching this today. I recently rewatched the Two-Face two-parter just as kind of a review, since I knew we were doing this episode soon. But I have a new fan theory, and it involves why Two-Face's skin is blue.
Hit me with it.
Harvey Dent was wearing a blue-colored suit when he with the explosion happened, and I believe that something in his skin interacted with the color of his suit, causing his skin to be permanently stained blue with the chemicals, of course, from the dangerous explosives that cause the actual scarring.
Okay. I mean, that's as good a theory as any. You know, I've seen, you know, I've had a friend or two that's, you know, had a chemical burn. I've never seen one turn blue before. So I like that as a theory.
My question is, were they wearing blue suits at that time?
You know what? They were not. So in 100% of recorded events involving a man turning blue after getting acid burns, he was wearing a blue suit as far as I'm concerned. So
there we go. It's canon until proven otherwise. I digress. Back to the actual plot here. So we also get that there are two people that are very interested in this upcoming surgery, as Batman and Robin are posted up outside of the hospital discussing if they think that this will be the actual thing that hopefully cure Two-Face. And despite the fact that we've had many appearances between the episodes of Two-Face and now, we sort of revert back to what Bruce felt very much so in the original Two-Face episode, which is certainly a sense of guilt about Harvey's transformation and his dear friend that he's known for so long that unfortunately turned into this somewhat of a monster. And he's hoping and has actually, and under the guise of Bruce Wayne, provided the funds needed to pay for the surgery, as we learned through some dialogue that Two-Face has with his therapist in the operating room, as Batman and Robin from above are looking through a skylight down. Just as Two-Face is put under using anesthesia, we get, of course, Nuns and Dynamite.
He's ready. Let's do it.
Come on! Sorry, isn't
insurance don't cover this. Don't hurt him. Boss wants to handle Dent personally. Said he wants to teach him some respect. Take a load off.
We get some armed men in masks breaking in, begin shooting up the place with Tommy guns, sending the doctors scattering. They mention that the boss doesn't want any harm done to Two-Face, so they drag an unconscious Two-Face out of the hospital. Batman and Robin do their best to try and break the glass on the skylight, but unfortunately, they just use that so darn good unbreakable glass. It just doesn't work, so they have to go through the old-fashioned way and try and run into the operating room, where they are met by said goons. I love how they burst into the operating room and smash the two guys standing behind the doors, but some fighting ensues at that point. They seem to be getting the upper hand, but a misplaced batarang, which fires into the ceiling and or hits one of the Tommy guns, which then fires into the ceiling, shooting one of the operating room lights down, and swings and pancakes Batman and Robin into the wall.
They're dead.
They should be.
The rest of this episode is like, you know how there's like that fan theory about everything? There's like a scene in every movie where any action movie where the hero dies, and they're like, he actually died there, and the rest of the movie is his like endorphins. that's this moment for Batman the Animated Series. He dies here. Batman and Robin die here, and all of their subsequent adventures and Justice League, that's all Batman's like last second before death fever dream endorphins rushing to his brain, as far as I'm concerned.
It's definitely pretty brutal. And because of this, they're incapacitated. The goons are able to escape with Two-Face. Batman and Robin are quickly on the rebound, however, surprisingly, up and at them, ready to chase after them, running through the floors of the hotel or the hospital to escape, and a chase after these villains. And as they get outside, two vehicles go in two different directions. Robin goes in one direction and Batman chases after the other. We get a pretty fantastic action scene, which I'm sure we'll cover. I think 90% of my notes are visuals, by the way. Like the other like 5% is music, and then that's like, and then there's a couple of lines that I noted here, but the visuals are just fantastic for this episode. Spoiler alert. There's a couple of simultaneous chases that happen. We get Robin going after one, some acrobatics up on top of a moving subway, and then chasing after and landing on one of the vehicles. It turns out it is the vehicle that has Two-Face in it, but Robin is shaken off of the vehicle. He's unable to get in or make the vehicle stop as they go through a tunnel, and he gets rammed into the side of the tunnel and has to jump off in order to prevent death. Batman, on the other hand, he has a motorcycle. I guess Robin
they
didn't
ride
bring
over together.
Yeah, I don't know how that worked, but Batman
Robin on a skateboard being pulled behind. Like, how did he get there?
He walked.
He walked from Wayne Manor.
That's right. He's being eco-friendly, you know.
He needed to get his steps in that day, so he jogged up the big Batmobile ramp that goes from Wayne Manor.
That's right. tremendous. So Robin, unfortunately, is literally left hanging and watching the car speed away. Batman, meanwhile, does his own chase and gets run off the road while on the motorcycle, and does his own pursuit of the vehicle, which leads to some pretty fantastic things, action sequences involving launching the Batcycle off of a ramp that's above the other ramp that has the car that he's chasing. The Batcycle lands smack dab on top of the car, knocking everybody out inside. But much to Batman's chagrin, Two-Face was not in this vehicle. Sorry, Batman, your princess is in another castle. But as Batman and Robin reconvene, they do realize that there's two clues that are left there that may in fact lead to who is behind this abduction of Two-Face, and one of them, the van that or the sedan that Robin was chasing was or no the van was registered to Rupert Thorne, and the sedan that Robin was chasing was headed towards Stonegate, which Batman says could be a clue that the Penguin who has a axe to grind with Two-Face is behind the abduction.
The van was registered to Rupert Thorne.
But Harvey was in the sedan. It was headed for Stonegate.
The Penguin's in Stonegate. He's had a grudge against Two-Face for a while now. Maybe this is his revenge.
Sorry I wasn't able to stop him.
I'm sure you did your best.
Don't gush all over me. It's embarrassing.
Sorry. Harvey's my friend. I'm worried about him.
Right, and I'm just the kid in tights. I'll see after I've checked out Thorne.
So, there's a little bit of tension here, though, as Batman and Robin, or as Robin sort of apologizes for not being able to stop the van, and Batman sort of less than thrilled about it and just sort of shrugs it off, and Robin isn't too happy with his response.
Yeah, there's an interesting tension here of as has been established and now reestablished at the start of this episode. Batman is very concerned for his old friend, Bruce Wayne's old friend, and Dick feels like he's sort of letting him down on a more personal level, and Batman is not exactly doing his best to encourage Robin for his, and again, I don't know, give the kid a motorcycle. I don't understand why he wasn't on a motorcycle, but whatever. Maybe that was the problem, Batman, especially since you also have the Batmobile, apparently.
Correct.
So with, maybe Robin came on the bike, but then Batman took Robin's bike for some reason.
Yeah, maybe because of the direction of where they were parked. It's not really explained. You can headcanon in a way, I guess.
I mean, you could say it. It's like, well, Robin is a more gift. He moves quicker because he's a gymnast and an aerialist, and so he's more equipped to chase a car down on foot than Batman. I suppose you could make that argument, but I don't know. Anyway, well, I'll hop off it for now. They decide they're going to split up. Batman and Robin leave things a little icy, and Robin goes off in search of Rupert Thorne, finds his manor where Rupert is held up, and begins to try to make his way into the room via the skylight, but is immediately caught and captured by one of Rupert's security guards,
Frankie,
yeah. Another returning character.
If Michael Rappaport was a cartoon character,
oh, 100%, 100%, great call. Oh man, yeah, that's him. But yeah, so Frankie gets the drop on Robin. Robin realizes he can't fight a guy with a machine gun pointed at his back, so he stealthily slips his little glass cutter into his glove, and then allows himself to be captured and taken in to talk to Thorne, where he tries to pump Thorne for a little bit of information, and Thorne makes it clear very quickly that he is not behind the kidnapping, though he wishes he was.
Frankie here says they found you snooping around my roof. Why? What are you trying to find?
Not what, Thorne. Who? Somebody grabbed Harvey Dent out of Gotham Central Hospital.
Somebody nabbed Two-Face and you thought I did it? Oh, that's great. I wish. I really hate that guy. He tried to put me out of business. I've been planning what I'd do if I ever got my hands on him again, and I'll tell you. No, better yet, as long as you're here, I'll show you. Boys, take the boy Wonder here down to Gotham Gate Bridge and see how well he flies. Thanks for giving an old man a good laugh, kid. Nice knowing you.
But he ultimately says that he does have some ideas of what he would like to do to Two-Face if he ever got his hands on him, and that Frankie and his other henchmen are going to show Robin exactly what he would do to Two-Face in such a situation. So we then get a scene of them driving to the bridge with Robin in the trunk, all tied up. We see him working to remove the ropes using that glass cutter. real, they make Robin look kind of smart. Like, he kind of looks dumb for not having a car earlier, mm-hmm. but they make him really smart here in the sense that he knew they were going to, you know, he couldn't use the utility belt. He doesn't have batarangs to use. His hands are tied, but he knew that he was going to, you know, he knew to keep the glass cutter handy. So we see him working on cutting the ropes that his wrists are tied with. Just as the trunk opens and Frankie and the other thug are going to toss him into the Gotham River below as Frankie makes some remarks about how there's too much trash in the Gotham River these days. And
you know, when I was a kid, I used to fish around here. Can't do it anymore. Know why? Too much garbage. You wouldn't believe the stuff people toss in the river. It's disgusting. People today got no respect for Mother Nature. Sooner or later, just you wait. They'll be sorry.
Not all the garbage is in the river.
You wouldn't believe what people would throw into the water these days. And Robin is thrown seemingly to his death. But of course, right then, the already frayed ropes break and he's able to fire the grappling hook. Should have taken the utility belt, guys. Come on. Is this your first day fighting Batman and or Robin?
Dummies.
But he has the grappling hook. He saves it, comes swinging in. And speaking of people that should be dead, he kicks these guys so hard. He kicks the guy in the passenger seat into Frankie, who goes flying through the metal door, and they tear the car door off its hinges. But those guys are fine, I guess.
Sure, maybe.
But yes, that takes care of Robin as he departs with another little quip. We then finally cut to Batman going to Blackgate Prison, where we see the Penguin is in a cell. And apparently he's just allowed to have a million birds in a little prison cell. As we see him conducting, which is funny because there's no music playing. I mean, there's music playing in the episode, which we'll get to. But he's just sort of having the birds dance, and they're all very well trained and doing little twirls before Batman makes his appearance and, of course, accuses the Penguin of kidnapping. And we get a little explanation as to their particular tiff. There was apparently some sort of two-headed bird statue that was worth quite a bit of money that the Penguin was planning to steal, but the Two-Face stole first. But Penguin assures Batman that he would not have kidnapped Two-Face from a hospital bed in some sort of a misplaced honor among the rogues gallery of Batman. But he isn't so honorable that he won't try to kill Batman with what little resources he has. This is this display here as Batman's standing out on the little windowsill, the little ledge outside of Penguin's window. He sends all of his many, I guess these are pigeons, after Batman.
Doves, maybe?
Yeah, and that distracts Batman enough for him to give him the old shove, and actually it almost works, which is the funny part about this, which I actually really love. I think this is like maybe, we'll get to it, this might be the best Penguin scene in the entire series, or at least the most like threatening he ever feels.
Dance, my little ones, dance for Penguin. Excellent! A Terpsichorean triumph! And what might you be doing out there? Catching insects for dinner?
I'm looking for Two-Face.
Why? Did you lose him?
Somebody kidnapped him from Gotham Central tonight. You and he had a disagreement some time ago, didn't you?
It's true. Harvey stole a rare Avis right out from under my beak several months ago. A jewel-encrusted statuette of a two-headed rock. It was worth millions. But, my dear rodent, I'd never kidnap a fellow rogue out of a sickbed. It just isn't done.
Honor among thieves?
Absolutely. If I were going to attack Harvey, I'd do it face to face. To face, so to speak. Like this!
But yeah, Batman is able to not fall to his death, and able to disappear before the prison guards see that he is in fact fraternizing with the prisoners. But it kind of puts Batman and Robin seemingly back to square one as they return to the hospital, comparing notes, and then they decide to go into the operating room where the kidnapping took place. And it's the return, the exciting return, Cal. I never thought we'd get to talk about these again. The magic crime-solving goggles are back. You spray a little aerosol, you put on these red goggles, and you could just see the clue you need to solve the crime. And it works to perfection once again here, as Batman sees that there are footprints, and he notes that the important footprints are these ones left behind, as most of the doctors would have been wearing paper socks. And so this one footprint must have been left behind by one of the kidnappers. And he realizes that there's masonry dust in there. The goggles realize that there's masonry dust in the footprint. And Batman clearly has an epiphany and decides he knows exactly who's behind this grand kidnapping plot. And tells Robin to sit it out, because he just needs to go do this alone. And he's going to once again leave Robin behind and go try to solve this himself. He leaves one parting bit of wisdom, which is that the man behind the kidnapping is Harvey's worst enemy.
That's right. So we get a shot. There's been a couple of Easter eggs that I don't think we are not Easter eggs, but breadcrumbs that were laid throughout, giving the viewer an idea of just who is behind the caper to begin with. And one of the lines that Harvey says at the beginning, just before he's put under anesthesia, is thanking Bruce Wayne and what a friend he's always been. And he remembers how they used to close down the Half Moon Club, and mentions that this old nightclub at the top of a skyscraper was being closed down and they were tearing down the building. Batman later on, after Harvey's abducted, he drives past and kind of it replays that one line in his head about closing down the Half Moon Club, as he sort of reminisces about his time there with his old friend. And then wouldn't you know it, showing up at the very end here, Batman's figured out that perhaps the person that abducted him is also at the Half Moon Club, and he shows up in a very dramatic fashion as a lightning storm comes in, and he stands there calling out, saying that he knows that the person behind this is there. They've always hated Harvey, and they would do anything that they could do to get rid of him.
You may as well come out now. I know everything now. You hated Harvey Dent and would do anything to destroy him.
Why not? He was gonna destroy me.
Just like I'm gonna destroy you.
And that's when it's revealed just who is behind the whole caper. And it is none other than, spoiler alert, Two-Face himself. Two-Face comes out mentioning that Harvey was going to try and get rid of him, and he had to do what he had to do. So he was, of course, behind all of it. So Batman is quickly overwhelmed by the amount of thugs after Two-Face begins trying to take him down himself. Two-Face's thugs show up with armed to the brim with Tommy guns, and Batman has no choice but to give himself up. He awakens shortly thereafter. He is attached to a giant wrecking ball hanging outside on this crane, and attached, he's handcuffed to the wrecking ball. The wrecking ball has dynamite attached to it with a remote sensor that Two-Face is holding. And Two-Face mentions that he and his goons are going to escape, and they're going to detonate the bomb so long as the coin tells him that it's okay to do so once they reach the bottom floor. He asks Batman if he feels lucky, in a very true Clint Eastwood fashion. Batman responds that he doesn't have a choice at this point, so he asks him to go ahead and flip the coin, but with one caveat: instead of catching the coin, to let the coin hit the floor, because he wants to see it. And as he does so, Batman begins reaching into his gloves and pulls out a lock pick, begins trying to pick away at the handcuffs that have him attached to the bomb. Which leads me to just ask, like, if he was going to go fight all the guys anyway, why didn't he just do that when all the guys showed up before? I guess the element of surprise or something, or he wouldn't also have to take on Two-Face at this point. But if he's going to fight all of the bad guys with the guns anyway, it doesn't make any sense. But anyway, don't think about it too hard.
What do you say, Batman? Feeling lucky?
Looks like I don't have much choice. Let it hit the floor. I want to see it.
That can't happen. No, it is impossible. It can't land on edge. It has to be heads or tails. How can I decide if it isn't heads or tails?
Two-Face begins flipping the coin. He lets it hit the ground per Batman's request, and wouldn't you know it, the coin lands on its edge, seemingly impossible to do. So he picks it up, he flips it again, and he becomes absolutely obsessed with the fact that this coin will not land on a side. It is tearing him apart. He's completely oblivious to everything that's going on around him. His one obsession is finding out what is happening with this coin and why won't it land. He needs an answer. Very much in the same vein as at the end of Two-Face Part 2, where he's simply undone with the fact that he can't get an answer from the coin. So because of that, he's completely distracted. Batman, meanwhile, frees himself, begins picking apart all of the henchmen one by one. And just when it seems like the henchmen start to get the upper hand, thankfully, at the last second, Robin swoops in. Meanwhile, by the way, the henchmen, who started just opening fire as soon as Batman freed himself around the bomb, the giant stack of dynamite. I think these guys must have been people that were fired from the Gotham City SWAT team or something, because they could not be more stupid. They're shooting at giant explosives tied to a wrecking ball while they're 10 feet away from it.
They also don't stop shooting when Two-Face runs in front of them.
That too. They don't care.
It takes them a couple seconds to stop firing when their boss, who we would assume they will not get paid without, is running in front of their gunfire, and they just keep firing.
So silly. So Two-Face keeps flipping the coin. It rolls all the way out on a exposed beam that's hanging out over the crumbling face of the building. He scooches himself out onto the very edge of the beam to grab the coin, but at the last second the coin begins to roll and fall off the edge. He launches himself over to catch the coin, does so, and manages to catch one of the beams with one of his hands. Batman also is able to recognize that Harvey himself, after getting rid of some of the goons, he sees that Harvey has thrown himself over the edge, so he runs to try and save him. He's holding on to Harvey by one arm, demanding that he release the coin. Harvey says he can't let go of the coin and grab Batman's arm with his other arm, because then he'll let the coin drop. Batman informs him at this point that the coin is in fact a trick coin that he swapped out when they were going through their scuffle prior to his capture, and that he has to let the coin go at this point.
Harvey, pull yourself up.
I can't. I'll drop the coin. Drop it. Save yourself.
I don't know what to do. The coin won't tell me.
It can't tell you anything. I switched coins when you grabbed me.
Good thing I decided to tag along after all.
It's a trick coin. It'll always land on edge. It's your decision now, Harvey. Life or death. The coin or me.
One of the goons recovers, picks up a gun, and it looks like he's going to off Batman at this point. But thank God, swooping in, the boy wonder, who I guess he was just as smart as Batman and put two and two together, pun intended, and came up with the Half Moon Club as the likely location for where Two-Face would be holed up. He does indeed show up there and saves Batman's bacon. Batman convinces Two-Face to drop the coin. He does. And it seems that he's sort of made this transformation back into Harvey and realizes that the Two-Face persona is gone. He reaches his other arm up to apparently grab Batman's arm, but instead clenches his fist, punches Batman, and it's revealed that Two-Face has gone nowhere. He'd rather die than accept Batman's help. So he begins free falling to his death. Batman, however, swoops in, and Robin swoops in right after him. And unfortunately, we don't see what happened. We don't know how they managed to rescue, but we do get sort of a postscript of what happens to our dear Harvey Dent.
Bruce, good old Bruce, always there. You never give up on me.
He's right. You're always there for him.
Yes. Just like you're always there for me.
Hey, what are friends for?
That's right. We see kind of, as you said, a bookend to the first scene of the episode, as once again, Harvey is being taken out of the back of a police cruiser, this time being taken back to Arkham Asylum to continue his psychiatric treatment. And who's waiting for him there other than Bruce Wayne in person in his brown suit? And he's there, and he once again reiterates that Bruce is a great friend to him and has always been there for him. And Bruce sort of not verbally, but sort of intimates to Harvey that he will still stand by him and be there for him no matter what as things move forward. And as Dick sort of walks up behind Bruce, he reiterates what a great friend Bruce is to Harvey. And Bruce sort of turns it around on him and tells him that, yes, just how Dick is always there for Bruce, he is always there for Harvey. And so we get the two partners walking off into the, it's not a sunset, it's like a dark, rainy night and there's lightning striking, but walking off as we sort of fade, pan up towards the sky as this particular adventure ends. The power of friendship saves the day. I don't think that's actually the moral, but that's where they end.
You get Robin sort of getting a he felt like he needed to prove himself to Bruce, mm-hmm. because he let him down. He shows up for Batman at the end, and he's rewarded with that by Batman doing the thing that he clearly Robin was asking for before, which is a little bit of positivity and a little bit of gratitude. And Batman is gracious.
Mm-hmm. Quite literally, Harvey Two-Face doesn't want to be helped, but Bruce is there to help him anyway, or at least at times doesn't want to be helped.
Yep.
And literally in this episode and other episodes, as we talked about last week in our Robin spotlight, funny enough, there's plenty of times where Robin is going to be there to help Batman, even when Batman doesn't want his help or won't ask for his help. So there is a real parallel there as they speak about at the very end of the episode there of Dick being there for Bruce in the same way that Bruce is there for Harvey. So it is, it is a nice little ending there.
Yeah, absolutely. Overall thought on the plot. I love this plot. Like, I love this story. I love the ins and outs of it. Obviously, once you've seen it one time, the mystery is no longer there. I had completely forgotten that the Penguin was in this episode, to be honest, before I watched it.
I love that scene.
It's so there's so many little things here. I mean, of course, we have two of the goats, Michael Reeves and Paul Dini, back together, working together, writing in just a really in-depth character study. I love that. It's more of a psychological look at the Two-Face character. I kind of miss that we have this really interesting episode, and then we kind of go a bunch of episodes in, or several episodes in the new Batman Adventures. They kind of tie it back in with the Judge episode, but you kind of miss that sort of cerebral psychological profile of this character, which obviously Mr. Deeney is a he's a master at being able to craft stories that go into the psyche of the rogues. So I really love that we get this kind of whodunit mystery, Batman and Robin working together as detectives to try and figure things out. They're both kind of fooled at first. You have these interactions. Robin does get to this. I mean, we only covered the first 65 episodes of the show last week, but this is like an episode that really does star Robin. Like you get some really good Robin action. You get him acting on his own. You get sort of his emotions, him being a detective, him interacting, him doing his own investigation. You know, it's a really good Robin showcase episode. That's for sure. But yeah, I think the action, I mean, as we'll talk about in the visuals, the action is just, it's wall to wall action. But the scenes that are not action are done so well, and sort of like that they're emotionally heavy. You get some great dialogue. We'll talk about it when we get to our other categories too, but some really good voice acting and some really great musical pieces accompany the episode. But it all pulls together with, you know, I think the idea that Bruce feels this guilt. And in the original Two-Face episode, Two-Face Part 1, in his, or it might be Part 2, he has this nightmare where it essentially is the same feeling that he has with letting his parents down with their murder. It's Part 2 for sure. But in that, if you take that thought that he feels a very similar feeling about this, except this character is still alive, like he can do something about this, but he's failed at doing this thus far. So this is his opportunity to rectify this thing in an area where he feels he let his best friend down, and now he can actually save him or help him or do whatever he can to help him. And I mean, it's interesting because I think you have real world parallels to this. If anybody has ever had a family member or a loved one that's, you know, has struggles with a disease of addiction, you kind of know that feeling of helplessness, of like wanting to help the person, doing everything you can. You can pay for rehab, you can pay for, you know, an intervention or offer them the best medical care that they could possibly ever have. Mm-hmm. But the problem remains with that person, and that they have to want to get better. And that's so, like, that parallel is so obvious here and done so well. That Bruce is the family member, is the loved one that's throwing the money at it, that wants to do anything and everything and feels responsible for this. But the truth, of course, is that the psychological effects of whatever the disease that that Two-Face is dealing with, he has his own burden to carry. He has his own role to play. He has his own responsibility. So it's interesting to see that and see those real world parallels in this story. And I really, really liked it. My only complaint is we get this really dramatic scene where Two-Face is free falling off of the building, and we don't see how it's resolved. It's a free fall. Batman swings, Robin swings, and then it's like lightning strike at Arkham Asylum. And I'm just like, I kind of just want to know how that resolved. Like, how did he get saved? I'm nitpicking, but it's like, how did Batman? Why, you know, did Batman swoop down and Robin had to help Batman pick, like, this guy's a huge guy that you're trying to catch free falling off of the side of a building. Like, how did this happen? But that's the only thing that the only complaint that I had, because otherwise I think from start to finish, it's so, so good. I love all the callbacks, the characters that were featured in the original Two-Face episode, Thorn's men, the psychologist, all of these things. You even get a flashback, a reanimated flashback, as we'll talk about in our next segment, to the actual sequence of the Two-Face transformation, just to fill in any gaps in case you forgot what an emotional bit this was for Batman. It's really, really strong. I really love it. I gave the plot a score of 9 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I gave it a similar score. I gave it actually the same score of 9 out of 10. My part is still, I'm still hung up on Robin not having a car or a motorcycle. I just, that to me, and it's, I understand we can look at this as a, you know, an entertainment device made for children and say, well, it's because we needed to have the thugs get away with Two-Face. that's the answer there. So it's easier to explain how Robin would let them go away if he's on foot and he's just hanging on for dear life on this car as it's swerving. And then, oh my gosh, he's about to get pinned against the wall and he has to save himself. That's fine. Except the easiest way to do this would be Batman isn't driving a motorcycle.
Right.
When he is chasing down the other thugs. If he's in the Batmobile, this problem is eliminated. But I guess they wanted to do and again, we'll talk about it. It's a really cool sequence. You know, the Batman, both chase sequences are awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that stuck out to me. And I don't disagree with there. I don't disagree with what you said as well. That it just kind of cuts with Batman and Robin swinging towards the camera. And then we cut right to the asylum and yeah, it would have been nice maybe to sit with that moment where he does catch Two-Face against his will, mm-hmm. before we cut to the end with them at Arkham. So like I said, it's great. It's a really, really strong episode for all the reasons you mentioned, for the how it plays off of the history, you know, the history that we know these characters have, and how it sort of again delves a little bit not only into Harvey and Bruce's relationship, but also Robin and Batman's relationship is really, really interesting. All the returning characters and especially like the Thorn connection is really fun. Throw that in there, like the Batman and Robin being on the trail, trying to figure out who's responsible. The twist being that Two-Face is so fractured. His mind is so fractured into these two distinct personalities that he could plan his own kidnapping without his other personality knowing about it. Is at least that's how I've always read it. Like yeah. Maybe the idea is, unless the idea is he was putting on an act the whole time, but I've always taken it as far as Harvey knew, he was getting surgery that day and he was getting better. Meanwhile, while he slept or whatever, while he thought he was asleep or whatever, Two-Face is making plans and coordinating with his henchmen to pull off this kidnapping. So I think that's a really, really great idea of them being so fractured. And it's a different kind of fractured. It's obviously plays out the same sort of way we see in with the ventriloquist and Scarface later on, but played mm-hmm. in a much more tragic way because of the direct personal relationship that Harvey and Bruce had that we've seen before. It really does. You really do feel like it's this moment where, oh, we're almost to the finish line. Like you can feel, and again, we'll talk about that in voice acting, where it feels like Batman Bruce is on the cusp of, hey, I'm going to get my friend back. Like this is a real turning point for him. And I'm going to actually see one of these, you know, these criminals that comes out of the revolving door of Arkham Asylum is finally going to get better. And the tragedy of Two-Face not being able to walk across the finish line there, and as you said, the moment where it looks like he's going to, he would rather punch Batman in the face and fall to his death than accept help from him because of how fractured this one person, one of his two personalities is. I think that's really brilliant and really melancholy and beautifully tragic. And then that little bit of hope in the ending there, where even after all of this, Bruce is still not ready to throw in the towel. He'll still be there every step of the way for Harvey. And in the same way as we just recently talked about on our 300th episode, when we talked about what Robin brings to the character of Batman historically, what the best versions of Robin have always brought to Batman being that he's the guy there to pull Batman back. Batman may be the main hero of this story. He might be the Frodo here, but Robin is Sam there to be the one to pull him back from the abyss as he's as he's fighting his own demons and fighting, you know, fighting his own, you know, his own issues and insecurities there. So it's a really, really well told story in the way that it's layered in there. And as you said, the parallels to, you know, real life things like addiction and things like that are very palpable there as well. So yeah, it's really strong. Like I said, there's a little couple little tweaks I wish they had done to maybe explain things a little bit better, but overall really, really strong outing. And again, if I didn't say enough, that penguin scene rules. That scene is so good. Him sicking the birds on Batman, and like he almost does it. He almost kills Batman by shoving him off a little ledge. And like it's the most, to me, it's like the most dangerous penguin ever felt in this show, or at least episodes that we've covered.
It also feels right on brand for a Paul Dini scene, like or Paul Dini and Michael Reeves collab scene. Like, just it's so goofy in a way. Like he's trained these doves or pigeons or whatever they are. He's trained these doves that he can just sick them on whoever, whenever, which I guess he may have, maybe they took his birds away at that point when they realized that he could sick them on people, I would hope. But the fact that he's there, he's got the birds, and he's just kind of like calmly talking to Batman. And then he just like the switch flips and he sicks the birds on him. It's really good. It's really, really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I always think of this scene when I think of like the best penguin stuff, but obviously having not come back to this episode for a long time, getting to revisit it, I was like, yeah, it's great. Yeah, like he trains the birds to dance and also to kill. Like what a weird little guy. He's just
killer dancing birds.
He's such a little stinker in this episode. And I love that little accoutrement just for one sense. Like you don't have to have, and you could look at that and go, oh, well, you don't need a penguin scene in this episode. He's, you know, we never saw him and Two-Face at odds before. Like, so you're adding something. But it's a really cool scene. And I like seeing both Batman and Robin on like the detective beat, trying to figure out what's going on and kind of being a little bit behind, not necessarily like we've talked about before, seeing them on their heels a little bit, seeing them a little bit off their game because because they weren't expecting this. So it's a really fun episode. Both those little side adventures with Robin getting grabbed by Thorne's guys and Batman with Penguin are a lot of fun little addendums to this episode.
Agreed. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And this week is a Dongyang production, right? Coco Dongyang, or is it just Dongyang?
Just Dongyang.
Just Dongyang this week. And right off the bat, there's some really incredible animation in this episode. Mm-hmm. Some really fantastic things, to the point where I was like, is this a TMS episode? Like there wasn't enough for me to say like, yeah, this is definitely a TMS episode, but there were some things like the aforementioned bird sequence where I was like, holy cow, that looks incredible. The way that the birds like fly at the screen and then they're flapping around Batman, and just that whole sequence is done really, really well. The chase sequence with Batman on the bike is really, really amazing. So there are several things where I was like, holy cow, this looks amazing. And then there are like one or two spots, anytime that they had like chest up and facial expressions, I was like, something's off here. I don't know what it is. The character just looks a little off model. But then there were other parts that were just phenomenal, phenomenal. Phenomenal things. So like I said, 90% of my 90% of my notes here are about animation and visuals. Kick things off right at the start, there is no dialogue for the first like minute or so, like 40-50 seconds. So you're really getting the idea of what's happening between the music and the visuals. That sequence of him stepping out, as I mentioned, in the shadow, you get just the yellow eye and the yellow teeth. And then even as he steps out of the shadow and the lightning strikes, you get mostly the Two-Face side of his profile. And then he slightly turns and you see the Harvey look, but the lightning in this episode from start to finish provides such an incredible character, like, to every scene. It's used to punctuate certain scenes. It's used to punctuate dialogue. It's used to punctuate the music. And each time that it does that, it's just like they could not have asked for more. From the beginning through the actual surgery attempts, and then the chase sequences on the bike, and then, you know, the scene at the Half Moon Club at the end. It just punctuates things perfectly. Even as Robin's being thrown off the bridge, the lightning strikes do a really great job there. But yeah, I'll just go through my highlights here, rapid fire. Several different sort of Max Fleischer cartoon painted backgrounds with, you know, the One Piece animated. We got a really beautiful shot of as they're about to put Harvey under anesthesia, the therapist is talking, and she reveals that, like, this will be the final thing to nail, you know, to do away with Two-Face. And at that point, his eye opens up and just kind of looks around shiftily. And that's kind of like a little Easter egg. Like, yeah, that's what you think. This is the end of Two-Face. Don't worry, I got a plan here to make sure this doesn't happen. But of course, anytime that you see the mostly painted background, and then the one thing that's animated, callbacks to classic animation are always going to stick out. Look, we talked about it already, but some of the things that happened in this episode between Batman and Robin being crushed by the light, the goons being crushed through the car, just some brutal action. Batman gets a closed fist punch to his face by Two-Face as he's hanging on the edge of the building. I don't know if the standards and practices people were sleeping when they review this episode or what, but feels like a lot of stuff got past them for this episode, because there's a lot more violence than I expected to be. Robin being like rammed into the side of the tunnel while hanging on the side of the car. Mm-hmm. Guns everywhere, the bike crashing, the motorcycle crashing through the roof of the car onto the, and smashing glass everywhere. All those things that they weren't really supposed to do seem to rear their head in this episode. I guess they were feeling a little bit more lax at this point in the series run.
Yeah, this isn't that in that back half, so I don't know if they some of the rules were relaxed or what, or if there's just, you never know who you were going to catch in that standards and practices offices at Fox Kids. And we got a few, the light fixture smashing them into the wall, Robin kicking the two guys and breaking the car door, the stuff you mentioned already, like, yeah, there's a lot of pretty violent stuff in this one. Even, yeah, some of the fisticuffs in that opening scene, really a dramatic stuff. So yeah, some really neat stuff that they do here as well that I just don't ever remember seeing. Like, I don't know why Robin can't just press the button in the elevator, but he does when he like ricochets the batarang off the back wall of the elevator, and then it flings forward and hits the button so that all the thugs are sent down so they're not caught in the explosion.
I have an answer for you.
Okay.
Because it would not be anywhere near as cool.
I will say, Dick Grayson, this Robin does feel like the kind of guy who would do something just because it's cooler. So I think that's a fine answer, quite frankly.
Yeah, he's cool. That thing's cool. I've dreamed about, like, if they were to do a Batman the Animated Series or even a new Batman Adventures game for a modern console, being able to do that, like, throw a batarang, it hits off, you got to hit it right off the right spot, and it hits the elevator button. Just
and this only works with those like flat topped batarangs, like, correct. The ones that have the bat ears, this wouldn't work on.
Correct. Something would be thrown off. It wouldn't hit the button right. You're absolutely right. It would hit the wall and stick into the wall. It wouldn't bounce.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know about the physics. The round makes the physics work, I guess. You're right.
Sure. that's really cool. The chase sequence, which you already talked about, I think there's one really neat like POV shot of Batman driving the motorcycle.
Where you see the control, like the control,
yeah, like the console.
Dashboard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really neat. I want to say, I don't know if that's also an Akira thing. I want to say that that shot has also has a specific like anime influence. If someone listening wants to tweet me at DCAU Review or hit us up on Instagram, let me know. I want to say that shot of the POV of the motorcycle dashboard might also be from a taken or lifted from a homaged a from a specific anime as well. But yeah, that sequence, like I said, even though I joked a lot about how the logic flaws of it, I do love both of those chase sequences a lot. They feel really dangerous and tense. And again, we weren't quite yet to this era, which I think maybe sometimes is overblown, but a lot of people complain now that Batman has like plot proof armor and he's always figuring everything else out. And when it looks like something's gone wrong, it's only because this was his plan the whole time, where it's like, now these two guys are struggling. Like they're kind of on their back foot. And I feel like the visuals of that sequence, and again, credit to Boyd Kirkland as the director and to Dong Yang as the animators who pulled it off, but they're both Batman and Robin feel like they're on their back foot and are kind of being caught off guard a lot in this episode. And then yeah, Batman's very nearly ran over by a semi truck at one point. So it's that whole chase sequence is a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's very much straight out of an action sequence. Like it's directed like you would see in a modern day, or I guess in an old action movie. It's done really, really well. Lots of the car chase, or the both chases are done with lots of action and done well. Let's see, what else did I have here? Oh, so we talk about one of our favorite things, Liam, is to go to the DCAU wiki and look under the inconsistencies portion of the article. Usually they give you some great trivia and some inconsistencies where they usually tell you some things are not as they should be. This week I scooped the DCAU wiki, and it's not real. I'm surprised because it's really not that difficult. As we mentioned, there is a flashback sequence that includes a completely reanimated version of the Two-Face origin, the actual scarring, the explosion that causes the scarring on his face. And so just for kicks, I was like, this looks different. And then I was like, well, no, it actually looks, it's pretty close. I'm like, but there's a couple things that just looked off. There is a really cool sort of pan that they do that goes kind of a 180 pan that is actually not in the original sequence that they added for whatever reason that looks really neat. But there are a couple of things that are not the same from the original sequence. So one of them is, so in the original sequence of the episode, Rupert Thorne is wearing a black suit, or dark charcoal gray suit. It's a very dark colored suit. Meanwhile, this episode's version of it, he's wearing sort of a much lighter gray suit. We have I believe the shadow work and stuff, some of the shadows are different. The face that Batman makes at the very end when he realizes the transformation is slightly less animated, meaning like he's slightly less upset about it, believe it or not, than the one in the original episode. And then we also have a line that's completely different also. He calls him Dent in the original episode, and then in this episode he calls him Harvey. So there was some inconsistencies there in the production that get on your game, DCAU wiki. What are you doing? You're sleeping at the wheel. I gotta get those so that I don't have to do my own comparison here. But yeah, it's actually, though, I was surprised. It is a pretty good shot for shot remake from the wires flying through the air and landing the explosion to him kind of, caught up in the explosion as he's hanging on the railing of the next to the chemicals, the way that Batman turns him over. You can tell if you played them side by side that they're not the same, but it's pretty faithful. So I was somewhat impressed by that, the fact that they were able to really do a pretty good job at recreating that, despite being a completely different animation studio. The original one being TMS, this one being Dong Yang. Couple other things that I had. I do love, man, that final, the reveal of Two-Face as our baddie. So Batman dropped that whole sequence. I could watch that whole sequence from start to the time that he falls off the building
probably a million times. It's so good. Batman drops into this, you know, decaying building, his cape just flowing everywhere, walking slowly, screaming into the echoey room at the person that he believes is behind it. And then this figure appears on the top of this mountain of gravel, and he's lit, backlit by silhouette, and it's just this white all the way around him. And you still see the sort of tuft of hair of Two-Face, but it's not clear that it's him. And then as Batman continues his dialogue, you finally get the strike of lightning and the reveal that it's Two-Face. And, you know, he jumps down off of it. And that whole scene, his hair is like flowing in the wind as this storm rolls in. I love the way that they animated him flipping the coin. Like, he grabs his elbow joint to kind of like steady his arm and flip it straight up in the air. The way that he follows the coin when he's crawling out to try and get the coin on the exposed beam, as he goes out, dust sort of drops off of the beam, indicating the sort of crumbling that's happening around him. And then as he's sort of scooching his way out to try and grab the coin, you get this up close look at his face, and he's just like pouring sweat off of him. Just a lot of really neat details that they included in that sequence. And everybody looks really, really cool and on model. And as I said, the lightning just adds, it's like its own character this episode. There is another inconsistency or a animation mistake that you picked up on with Robin's sleeve being colored incorrectly in the Rupert Thorne scene, I believe. Mm-hmm. And like I said, anytime that they had somebody from the chest up, it's like it was a completely different person animating, and it felt like there are some scenes where Batman looks a little wonky, and they did that thing where they didn't do the lighting correctly. So he's like almost all blue, or he has mostly blue highlights with a little bit of black highlights. So there were a couple things that I didn't love, but I think the action alone carries this. Like I said, wall-to-wall action almost from the start to finish. The little downbeats play really, really well. You really feel that emotional play at the end when Harvey gets out of the Arkham Asylum ambulance at the end, and he's sort of standing there. You get the bookend where instead of seeing just Two-Face, you see just Harvey, the Harvey side, and he's talking to Bruce, kind of giving you the visual cues that he's still there, he's still fighting, and he still recognizes Bruce's friendship. And as you said, the sort of walking off together, Dick and Bruce kind of repairing things and giving him the Bruce giving him the kudos he deserves is a great little bow tie on the end there. So for all those reasons, I gave it a very strong 9 out of 10 also for my visuals and animation, despite a few nitpicky things and things that didn't quite look on model. I think the action and the little downbeats there do it justice.
Yeah, they do some really interesting things. You know, I was thinking about that while you were talking about the choice to recreate the scene from Two-Face Part 1 with new animation rather than just reusing the footage. And I wonder if that comes down to just the sort of mild changes to the art style that we would see this far in. Like Batman's kept much more on model, and the backgrounds aren't quite as dark and things like that. So I wonder if it was just they felt like it wouldn't match up properly to cut in like the footage from the previous episode, or if it was just the idea. I mean, I feel like you get away with some of the stuff not quite matching up because it's Batman's memory, and you know, memory isn't always 100% accurate. So I feel like you can logic it away there if you want to. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting choice there. One of the sequences that really stood out to me, as short as it is when Robin is in the trunk of the car and he's tied up. They speaking of older episodes, they kind of do that thing. I always think of it as like when Man Bat's reveal, where I think it's somehow they do it with like the way the film is exposed or something, or where the kind of there's these very thick sort of black lines. It looks a lot like a Fleischer Superman scene where there's very minimal background. We have these kind of thicker black shadows and lines over like the top and bottom half, and it's just kind of this smaller window where we see our one enemy, the character, moving. And I really thought that stuck out. I was like, oh, this kind of looks like something you would see in the first 5 or 6 episodes of the show, when it's really dark, when it's really that black paper, you know, background going on. So I really liked that sequence as well. I thought that stood out to me. Yeah, all the stuff of them walking around, a lot of great hashtag Kate movement in this episode. There's a shot after the two side adventures of Thorn and Penguin, when Batman and Robin are sort of meeting back up. We got to get the lightning strike is sort of our cut, and then as the lightning strikes, we cut to Robin sort of just standing, looking out into the city with his cape flowing, and then Batman walks up behind him as they begin to compare notes. A lot of cool tricks, and again, that comes down to like the editing and the directing of the episode as much as it does the animation itself. But if I didn't already say, I also gave it a 9 out of 10. I think, yeah, there's so many cool little things. The use of silhouette, the use of the backgrounds all look really good. The idea, it does rain for a little bit at the start of the episode, but to have it be just kind of overcast, and again, the lightning used very, very dramatically at points, but it's not raining throughout the whole episode. So you just have these very cool looking sort of dark, like brushstroke clouds in the background of almost every scene. When Batman's strapped up on the bomb, on the wrecking ball, and the lightning striking with those very dark gray clouds in the background. There's some, yeah, the background work in this episode, some really cool environments to drop our characters into. It's some really, really good stuff all around.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good note there with the backgrounds. There's lots of good stuff all the way around there. A visually, really, really like, I don't know. It's just a great episode to look at. So great job there by everybody involved. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And I believe Todd Hayen is responsible for the music this week. And I don't know. We know that he's worked on several episodes, but even the Batman the Animated Series wiki doesn't say what he did, what episodes he may have worked on other than that. So if you know, feel free to tweet us or talk to us on Instagram about it. But Mr. Han, I love the soundtrack for this episode. I think from the get-go, it sets the tone. It's very melancholy. It's very mellow. You have this sort of theme that is not the Two-Face theme, but it's similar to it. It's married to it, I would say. It marries it well. And it's sort of this theme that accompanies the sort of dark clouds and the sadness and the sorrow. And it plays as we kind of get the narration of what's going on and what's happening. And then the music kind of picks up and you get the horns and the strings once the abduction begins to happen. That theme then sort of transfers into the chase sequence theme. We return to more of the melancholy, sad theme when Bruce is reminiscing about him and Harvey at the Half Moon Club. And then that chase sequence theme kind of comes up again. We do get the Penguin theme also. Perfectly punctuates the dancing birds in that sequence, which I love. And then we get more of some mood setting music for Robin being thrown over a bridge. What do you think it sounds like when someone gets thrown over a bridge? Check out that scene. You know, what music is best for those types of sequences? Check out that scene. And then that final sequence, just absolutely, we return to that same sort of, it's just like a powerful marching theme almost that you get for that just continues to increase its intensity as Harvey begins to chase the coin further and further, visually getting further and further away from what he was trying to do. He's just chasing this coin off into madness, into death almost. The music that accompanies it as he punches Batman and he lets go and,
like I said, the lightning strikes sort of punctuate certain musical moments during the chase sequences. Oh, this episode is so good. The music is so great.
I love it. I appreciate what you said. There are bits of the character themes. You hear a little bit of the Batman theme. You hear little bits of the Two-Face theme interlaid, as you said, but the episode itself really kind of has its own unique identity despite using those themes. One great exception, I'm going to come back to that freaking penguin seed again, which is that, as Zed, like, within the context of the world, he's doing this in total silence. But as we are watching it, he is conducting his little bird orchestra, his performance, to the penguin theme.
Yep.
Which is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The way that's brought in. And then as the birds are dancing and the penguin theme is going, you see the searchlight hit his back, and you see the silhouette of the bat ears, and then the little bit of the Batman theme comes in on top of it. Really, really cool. Really, really well done. So, like, the use of the character themes while still giving this episode its own identity. And yes, I think that final act is, yes, the notes get a little more shrill, a little more dramatic, a little more sudden the closer he's getting, as he's running after the coin and it's going out onto the ledge. And then you see him look down, and I don't know if we mentioned this, but the camera kind of does this really kind of quick, jerky zoom thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the big shrill crescendo you get when you kind of to intimate Two-Face looking down and being completely aware of the peril he's in by going out to walk on these beams, but not being able to stop himself, and the music accompanying that. And then, yeah, the soft music as it looks like for a moment he's going to accept Batman's help before ultimately, you know, throwing the punch with the other hand, and the crescendo we get there. Really, really, really strong stuff throughout.
Yeah, that's why I ended up giving music a perfect 10 out of 10 for this episode.
Yep, we're 3 for 3 so far. I also gave music a 10 out of 10.
All right, let's see if we can make it a perfect game with 4 for 4 here at the end, Liam. We'll check out our scores for our entire voice cast. So not a big cast this week. As we mentioned, we have some characters returning from their appearances in Two-Face and general reappearances from throughout the series. But yeah, not a huge cast to talk about, but certainly some worthwhile performances to discuss. Why don't we go ahead and break down this week's voice cast?
Absolutely. So we have a few returning voice actors. Obviously, we have Linda Gary returning as Dr. Crest briefly, as mentioned, Harvey's psychiatrist.
I never put 2 and 2 together that his psychiatrist was in the operating room. As many times as I watched this, I just assumed that it's cool that they brought back the psychiatrist from Two-Face Part 1 for this little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be her. You don't have to put that in, but it just gives it a little extra bit of continuity there. And then, as mentioned, we have Matt Landers also returning as Frankie, Rupert Thorne's right-hand henchman here. Again, as you hit the nail on the head with your Michael Rapaport comparison. just like classic slimy two-bit mob guy.
Not quite as memorable, I feel like, as his most notable DCAU performance as Louie in the episode Terry's Friend Dates a Robot, the guy who creates the sleazy guy who creates the robot and sells it to Howard. So much more memorable there, I'd say. But that again, you could have made any of these thugs those thugs, like the interchangeable thugs were a thing in this show. You didn't have to keep the continuity of the same thug, but it is nice that the same guy got to come back and do the same role for a character that was a pretty big part of that first Two-Face episode, because he causes like a huge public incident of Big Bad Harv coming out the first time by kicking mud on Harvey Dent, and then obviously is the one who's shooting the gun at Dent that causes him to fall down and end up getting the wires that
get sprayed on and end up causing him to turn into Two-Face. So he's as much a part of the transformation as Rupert Thorne is.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, we have John Vernon returning as Rupert Thorne. Would be his last appearance in the main series. He does pop up way down the line in the Mystery of the Batwoman movie, but it was this is his last little hurrah. It's a small appearance here, but I always loved having him pop up, and the idea of this guy who there's clowns and real guys and two faces and penguins in this world, and he's like the last mob guy that's still holding on, like the last old school mobster still holding on somehow.
Yep.
To a little bit of power in Gotham City. So anytime John Vernon pops up as Rupert Thorne, a lot of fun, and his interaction with Robin is a lot of fun. Of he's at no point is he like trying to pretend he's an upstanding citizen. Like he knows they know the score. He knows nobody can touch him. So he's like, you know what? I'm just gonna have my guys kill you. Like he's so nonchalant about it. He's in his robe and sandals, and he's messing with the fire poker the whole time. But yeah, Mr. Vernon, we've sung his praises quite a few times over the years. But just a small role, but a lot of fun to see him pop back up here as one of our red herring suspects.
We didn't talk about it in visuals, but two things. One, production inconsistency. He has whites behind his eyes for this episode.
Ooh.
And number two, he's got a little ascot that he wears in his smoking jacket and his little slippers as he's interrupted before bedtime when Robin is attempting to break in. Yeah, tremendous actor. Anytime we get to talk about his performance, I don't know that he has enough stuff to talk about a spotlight episode. But boy, what a great character, recurring character for this series, and a perfect casting, like the perfect slimy guy that you just want to see get his comeuppance from Batman. Perfect thug.
Absolutely. And speaking of our other red herring villain for this episode being, of course, as mentioned, Paul Williams is the Penguin. He gets one scene. I've already said it. I think this is the best Penguin scene in the whole original animated series run. He's great. He's so slimy. He's so, like, from the moment Batman arrives, he's like, well, I know I didn't do this, but I'm gonna mess with him while he's here. So he's you know, not only in just explaining the beef between him and Two-Face, but then him that sort of veneer that we all know is a put on, this veneer of sophistication that he insists on pretending to have, and how he simply would never do something like this to a fellow bad guy. He's so fun in that scene. I love the scene. Can't say enough good things about that Penguin scene, and Paul Williams obviously a huge part of the reason why it's so great.
Yeah, I love his line where, you know, he's really offended that Batman thinks that he would have done something to try dishonorable to take care of Two-Face. And he says the line, of course, which you can't have a Two-Face episode where somebody doesn't make a joke or a verbal pun like this. But he says, of course, that if he was going to attack Two-Face or to attack Harvey, he would attack him face to face. Two-Face.
He's so proud of himself. He's so smug for making that joke.
Yes, he's like, I'm the first one to ever think of this. You know, I'm gonna win all of the bad guy awards for coming up with this idea. Yeah, he's really, really funny. But yeah, that whole scene, really, really great. I wish we had more Penguin training birds to attack Batman, and Mr. Williams' great performances as the Penguin to discuss.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, before we get to our main players here, our main heroic players, I should say, our main villain of this piece, and villain and victim in this case, his own worst enemy, Mr. Richard Mull, the late Richard Mull. I don't think we've done a Two-Face episode since he passed away late last year. Oh my goodness, is he good in this episode? Oh my gosh, he's great in this episode. From the Harvey parts at the start and end of the episode, where he has this sort of, he sounds so tired. Like, he sounds so worn out by being Two-Face.
Yeah.
And he's ready. Like, it feels like, oh, he's ready. Like, he's ready to move on. He's ready to change his ways, to take this next step forward. He sounds like Bruce's old friend again. He sounds more like he did in those early episodes of the series. And then when we get that reveal in the third act, and Two-Face is revealed as the kidnapper, you get what you would expect the classic Two-Face voice, and the way he's sort of generalizing it and explaining it away is so good. And then you get to see him sort of sink deeper into that mania as the coin keeps landing on Edge. And even once Batman explains to him, the coin will never land, not on Edge, it's a trick coin, you have to stop this, he still won't let it go, because in his head, the only thing that makes sense is that it has to be heads or tails. There's no,
right.
Even when it's explained to him that this is a trick, he still can't let it go because the coin isn't telling him what to do at this point. So it's like, there's so many layers to what he has to do in this episode. Oh man, he's great.
Yeah. I don't know if there's much that I can add. I can certainly agree the weariness that he has at the beginning is, and at the end, like the subdued, like, realization that Bruce is sticking by him regardless, and that he has a friend that loves him and cares about him as much as he does, and what it means to him. That line about, tearing down the club and closing down the club at the Half Moon Club that they replay is just, it's so perfect. Everything you said about his performance, just the dichotomy of the difference between the two characters, the softer Harvey moments that still have a little bit of the rasp. It's clearly not the Harvey that we knew before when he was DA, but he's certainly softer in those moments. And then just the unhinged nature once the coin starts betraying him is just phenomenal. Yeah, it's great. You said everything that could be other than that could be said about the performance. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. And then we just have our two main heroic players for the episode. We of course have Lauren Lester as Robin and Kevin Conroy as Batman. Again, great. We've already kind of talked about the big points of why this episode works so well for both of them as actors. You're telling a little bit of a deeper story. You're pulling on the history that we know Bruce has with Harvey and with Two-Face. And at the same time, looking at, Robin, who kind of feels like he's screwed up and is trying to be there for Batman, trying to be there for Bruce in the same way that Harvey is there for him. What else is there to say about how good Lauren Lester and Kevin Conroy can be together? But yeah, they get a lot to sink their teeth into this week. And not surprisingly, it's a home run.
Yeah, great chemistry between the two of them. This is maybe to date, other than Robin's Reckoning, one of the most serious performances and lack of quips that Robin has. I think he's pretty serious for almost the entire episode. I think he gets one little quip in about not all the garbage being in the river after he's able to escape his attempted murdering by Rupert Thorne's goons. But other than that, it's a pretty straightforward, like very serious, very dramatic turn for Mr. Lester. And of course, Mr. Conroy puts on a clinic of being the concerned friend and even gets a turn consoling and like I said, like we talked about, showing gratitude to Dick for the friend that he is to him. And it's unsurprisingly, there's not a ton that we can say other than really, really strong performances from both of them. And that's why I ended up giving voice acting them and Mr. Mull and everything else, Mr. Williams and Mr. Vernon, ended up giving voice acting a perfect 10 out of 10.
Drown the kids and shoot the neighbors. We did it again, folks. I also gave it a 10 out of 10. For voice acting, that's a joke.
My goodness.
I'm not advocating violence. Don't strike us, you two. But no, that's yeah, this episode is great for all the reasons we've already talked about. Our three lead actors are so good. Our supporting cast is really, really strong in some limited scenes for Mr. Vernon and Mr. Williams has talked about. It's great. It's one of those ones, as we move into our final scores in a second, it's one of those ones where you get to the end of this episode and you're like, well, why can't they all be this good? Why can't, and there's different, and obviously that's why we often break things down into these four categories. Why we always break things down into these four categories is because we want to make sure we're shining a light on everybody's good work in an episode, even if something else, another category maybe lets it down a little bit. But this is one of those ones where it's like, nope, everybody was on. Everybody was firing on all cylinders. And the voice acting bringing up the rear, so to speak, here, just doing a great job all around.
Absolutely. And that's reflected in our scores as we total up our final scores here, Liam. We end up with I can say we, because we, as you mentioned, we had the same exact score, a 38 out of 40 for this week. Do we even need to discuss whether or not this two thumbs up rewatchability? Absolutely. Great episode, integral to the story arc of Two-Face. As we mentioned, it's not quite it feels like you're almost ending on a happy note here because we know that there's still hope. Fittingly, the Two-Face Part 2 ends with where there's love, there's hope. And then at the end of this episode, we see Bruce's love for his friend Harvey there for him, being loaded out, unloaded out of an ambulance back to Arkham Asylum to get more treatment. And Bruce is still there. Bruce is standing by him. So where there's love, there's hope. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. The next time we see Two-Face, I'm pretty sure is probably old wounds. Or not old wounds. What's the first episode with Robin?
Sins of the Father.
Sins of the Father. Yeah, the Sins of the Father. And there's no explanation. We don't know what happened to his treatment. Again, we do get sort of the psychological aspect of that character revisited later on in the new Batman adventures, but yeah. It's often just sort of, it's almost as if this episode was just sort of dismissed. That doesn't, for me though, negate the amazing piece of work this is, and a well worthy sequel or follow up to one of the best episodes of Batman the Animated Series being Two-Face. So incredible. Two thumbs up. A well worthy sequel. It's the Godfather 2, maybe, of the Batman the Animated Series follow up sequel episodes, I dare say.
Yeah, this is one of the very best. And like I already said, it's one of those ones that goes, oh, that's why we've been doing this show for 5 years, because we still got ones like this left to talk about.
Yep.
That's why we're still going after 300 plus episodes here. So it's great. We can mention here, there was almost another or different sequel to that original Two-Face episode. It ended up being turned into the two-part Batman and Robin Adventures numbers 1 and 2.
That's right.
Our friends at the Watchtower Database actually did a great little video on the history of that, which you could check out. There's some Pod Tower synergy for you. But
Kevin Altieri mentioned it, I believe, on the last time we had him on, too.
Absolutely. But it would have involved bringing the character of Grace, Harvey Dent's once fiance, back in as well. So would have been and was almost made into, I believe, one of the animated movies. I guess that would have been Sub-Zero.
Yes, I believe that's what Kevin said.
Made instead. If the whole team, I guess, obviously Paul Dini along with Alan Burnett and Bruce Timm and other people broke off to start developing Superman, and then some of the other folks continued working on and did the Sub-Zero movies. So Who knows what could have been. Those two comics are great. We'll look at those one day in a bonus episode as a what could have been as far as another direct sequel to that Two-Face episode. But yeah, as it stands, as far as on-screen stuff goes, gosh, this is great. This is a masterpiece. So just a ton of fun to talk about.
Agreed. All right, Liam, let's wrap things up for this week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Another great one. If you like this episode, maybe you didn't like this episode. Maybe you hate this episode. Tweet us and let us know your thoughts, why you don't like it. Yeah, yeah. Show your work. Don't don't IMDb synopsis this. Tell us exactly what's going on here and give us explicit details as to why you don't like the episode. Or maybe you agree with us and you share your notes. We have some people every single week that'll send us their thoughts, their review, their scores. We love that. Don't forget also, of course, if you want to support the podcast, you can follow us on social media at DCAU Review, both on Twitter/X and Instagram. We have a Facebook also, but we update it very sparingly. I think we're also on Threads also. Liam throws up a thread every now and then, so that's still alive. So check that out. And of course, you want to support the podcast directly. There's a couple of ways to do so. You can check out the show notes. There's a link to support us monthly with a monthly donation. We have a couple people that do that every single month, and we thank them for their support. You can join them, or you could also pick up something from our store. You can head over, check out that link, and pick yourself up a piece of merchandise to support the pod. And we would greatly appreciate that type of support as well. You can also, the easiest way to support the pod is to leave a review on your favorite podcast app, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave a 5-star review and let the good people at home know what it is that you like about the pod. If you do so on your Apple Podcast app and we see the review, read it on air, we'll send you a little thank you gift just for dropping that little paragraph there. So if you live within the continental United States, is the little fine print there is the requirement in addition to the aforementioned criteria. Liam, we will continue next week with our reviews of Batman the Animated Series, and we are staying here in production order with another good one next week.
That's right. This is another, I think, all-time classic, one that gets brought up a lot on the best episodes of this series list, and that is, of course, another solo adventure from everyone's favorite former hench girl, that being Harley Quinn in the episode Harley's Holiday. Definitely an all-time classic in my mind. Excited to see how it holds up under a more recent rewatch next week.
Absolutely. Can't wait to check that one out. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
We'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.